Hey, this is Ari, and you're listening to Novum. The story I have for you today might not at first seem like it has that much to do with science fiction, but if you take anything away from this episode, it should be that appearances can be deceiving. This is the story of the Jungle Gym. Yeah, the same Jungle Gym that you almost certainly played on as a child. The Jungle Gym might have different names in your country. Perhaps you know it as the climbing structure or the climbing frame. For those of you who still don't know what I'm talking about, well, Jungle Gyms come in all different shapes and sizes and have evolved a ton in the nearly 100 years that they've existed. But nearly all have in common a three-dimensional geometric structure with either rope or some sort of piping connecting various points within the frame. A simplified version of the Jungle Gym is the monkey bars, which consist essentially of an elevated ladder that children can swing from hand over hand. So, you're probably asking, what is all this hullabaloo over a fun playground structure? Isn't this a science fiction podcast? Well, you're right, it is. And I'm here to tell you that the Jungle Gym has a secret, scandalous sci-fi history that has been forgotten. What you might not know is that Jungle Gyms are artifacts of a vanished school of thought, one that believed humans had a greater destiny, and that if only they changed their perspective on the world, they could access it. The story of how the Jungle Gym was invented will span over 100 years, from the birth of Sebastian Hinton's grandfather James to Sebastian's own tragic suicide. And this is a story of polygamous marriages, spiritual crises, and the fourth dimension. Are you with me? Okay, let's get started.
All right, I'm going to ask you a series of questions. Just relax and answer them as simply as you can.
James Hinton was born in 1822 in the town of Reading within the UK. He was raised in an extremely religious family. His father, John Howard Hinton, was a Baptist minister, one of a long line of religiously fervent Hinton preachers. James, however, was destined to have a much different path in life. James excelled at school, studying medicine rather than the Bible. And soon, James was a practicing surgeon, first traveling all around the world, from China to Africa to Jamaica, earning a reputation as one of the top surgeons anywhere in the world. Finally, James settled down in London for a chance at a stable life and marriage with the woman he had loved from afar for 10 long years. Now, from this description, James might sound like a truly model citizen, but this was not at all the case. In fact, James was a polygamist. Big time. In fact, it wouldn't be crazy to say that James Hinton was the foremost polygamist of his day. And his behavior did not go unnoticed, as James was absolutely shameless with women, and he shocked polite 19th century society. Others found themselves electrified by the new ideas that James was spreading. James Hinton's biographer, for one, was worshipful of him. She wrote, "Hinton was possibly destined to help the world to rediscover love." James Hinton believed that the mind should be set free to pursue what was pleasurable. And he was obsessed with teaching others ways to liberate themselves from the restrictive world that they inhabited, just as he had. When he wasn't writing books on medicine, James was writing about sex and extolling the virtues of free love. In this way, James was a little too liberal for his time, as he was writing about how man could achieve his true purpose through sexual pleasure over 100 years before the free love movement of the 1960s. At the same time, James was upsetting the religious community of Victorian Britain. James found Christianity as a mode of saving the soul deeply disingenuous. James once remarked to his wife that, and I quote, "Christ was the savior of men, but I am the savior of women, and I don't envy him one bit." It seemed that James had a singular mission on earth to be as controversial as humanly possible. James was somewhat influential in his Victorian circles, but the most important person that James passed on his morals to was his son, Charles Howard Hinton. Now, guys, I know it might not seem like it, but in moving on to James' son, we're one step closer to the invention of the jungle gym. Having probed the jungle gym's salacious roots, and by the way, we're not done with all of the promiscuity that attends its eventual creation, we can now move on to the jungle gym's roots as something other than a fun way for kids to pass the time. Before the jungle gym made it onto the playground, was it ever used for anything other than play? Yes, it was. So stick around. Charles Howard Hinton was born in London in 1853, and Howard, as he was known, grew up immersed in his father's notoriety. But like his father before him, Howard was able to escape his family's shadow and excel in school. Rather than medicine, Howard became obsessed with mathematics. But Howard was very different from his father in many ways. Firstly, he clung to spiritual ideals. It gave him a sense of purpose in life. And he even wished to become confirmed within the Church of England when he was older. While studying at Oxford, Howard went through an experience familiar to many college students. He found out just how little he really knew. But this experience hit Howard much, much harder than it hits most. Unlike his father, James, it was not so easy for Howard Hinton to cast out his religious ideals when they directly contrasted with the world he observed. Hinton fell into a deep depression. He wrote letters home to his father that he was in a state of religious crisis. He felt that he could no longer trust anything that he saw or felt as true. The modern world, with its technology and x-rays, was profoundly disturbing to his sensibilities that there was something unique and special about the human soul. So how did Howard Hinton choose to heal himself? Well, through geometry. Geometry, Howard Hinton wrote, and this is perhaps in direct contrast to his father's obsession with sex, is an exercise in direct perception. Howard Hinton was sure that through the study of geometry, he could learn to see the world as it truly was, and maybe even teach others to do the same. Geometry was stable and had unbreakable laws, right? Well, not exactly. In fact, around the time that Hinton was studying mathematics, geometry was changing. Famous mathematicians like Bernhard Riemann and James Bolyai had recently disproved elements of geometry that had been stable for over 2,000 years, since the time of Euclid. Credible people were beginning to introduce the idea that there might be other unseen dimensions to the world that we as humans, in a three-dimensional world, couldn't perceive. To Howard, this type of uncertainty wasn't paralyzing. It was invigorating. What if Hinton himself could use geometry to access this spiritually higher dimension that he was seeking, one that he felt had been denied to him by the modern world? He decided he had to try. So the first thing that he did was to teach himself to see the insides of a solid three-dimensional structure. Howard Hinton bought a set of wooden cubes and labeled each side, angle, and point of each one. And he would memorize all of these. Next, he would arrange the cubes into a cube superstructure. And finally, for hours, Hinton would sit and force his mind to visualize the interior of this supercube. It took quite a while, but then Hinton saw something. It was something that perhaps had never been seen before. A mystical, mysterious object that Hinton came to call the hypercube, or tesseract. As Christopher White writes in his biography of Howard Hinton, the hypercube is a geometric object created by stretching a cube into an additional fourth dimension that is perpendicular to the other three directions, a direction that we cannot perceive. End quote. Now, it is unknown exactly what this structure looked like to Howard Hinton, but the tesseract, or hypercube, is actually a real representative structure of the fourth dimension in mathematics, and we can build a somewhat accurate computer model of it. And Hinton is considered, to this day, somewhat its discoverer. This vision of the fourth dimension amazed Howard. He felt certain that he had trained his brain to enter a spiritually more perfect dimension, of which our three-dimensional world was nothing but a crude shadow. Finally, Howard saw his purpose. He was going to teach impressionable children to see the world that he had glimpsed. As a traveling lecturer at prestigious universities around the globe, Howard had a unique access to children as test subjects, and he began to train several children in fourth dimensional sight. These rigorous sessions included training children to memorize the position of cubes, as Howard himself had done, and other activities like playing at chess blindfolded. It was all about learning to position yourself perfectly within a dimensional world. Hinton's ideas were beginning to spread all over the world, and his ideas would prove profoundly influential to many writers and thinkers such as H.G. Wells, H.P. Lovecraft, C.S. Lewis, and apparently the only one on this list without initials for name, Robert Heinlein. It wasn't necessarily that Hinton was insanely successful at training children, but in his newly discovered fame, he was more determined than ever. And no children did Howard Hinton train more vigorously than his own. So, while Howard was in many ways a different man than his father, Howard grew up to resemble James Hinton in a few very unfortunate respects. For one thing, Howard was also a polygamist, a notorious one. 3 years after marrying his first wife, Howard had another secret marriage ceremony with another woman, under a false name. When Howard Hinton's infidelity finally came to light, his first wife was pregnant with Howard's fourth child, Sebastian. During this time, the press was not kind to Howard, and he was soon convicted of bigamy, and his whole family was exiled from Great Britain. Howard took his family, including young Sebastian, and moved them to Japan. And here, Howard decided to try a wholly new system of training children to access the fourth dimension. Howard theorized that humans were unable to perceive the fourth dimension because they spent most of their lives walking on a flat or two-dimensional surface. So he had the idea that if children grew up learning to move in three dimensions, they would more easily be able to visualize higher realms. So to solve this and to test this idea out, Howard had built a superstructure out of bamboo in his backyard and labeled every point on it. When Sebastian Hinton and his brothers were old enough, Howard Hinton led them on training drills. He would call out a set of three-dimensional coordinates within the bamboo structure, and the four boys would clamber to that point as fast as they possibly could. Over and over they did this. Christopher White notes that Hinton's sons knew, quote, that there was an educational purpose behind the climbing cubes, but they had fun with it nevertheless, and knew that they were indulging their father, end quote. Howard Hinton may not have succeeded in teaching others to perceive a spiritually more perfect dimension, but he did influence an invention that would persevere long after his death and until the information age. Unfortunately, Howard Hinton died in 1907, 13 years before his son Sebastian Hinton applied for a patent for what he called the Jungle Gym. It was practically the same structure that Sebastian and his brothers had been trained on when they were younger. But what once had been used as this rigorous training tool for dimensionally impressionable children, like Sebastian himself, would be utilized for a much different purpose. Fun. As it turned out, the Jungle Gym was a perfect fit for the developing interest in childhood physical education that was developing in the early 20th century. The Jungle Gym caught on immediately, and its position as king of the playground remains pretty much unchallenged to this day. And you'll find Jungle Gyms wherever you go around the world. Okay, I was never very good at the monkey bars. I could barely even keep myself up. But according to Sebastian Hinton, if children are introduced early enough to this type of activity, nothing could be more natural. In his first patent application in 1920, Sebastian Hinton wrote, "Climbing is the natural method of locomotion which the evolutionary predecessors of the human race were designed to practice, and is therefore almost ideally suited for children." In fact, Hinton wrote that he set out to create, quote, "a kind of forest top through which a troop of children may play in a manner somewhat similar to that of a troop of monkeys through the treetops in a jungle." So, I guess the final question is, what became of the inventor of the Jungle Gym? What happened to this boy who had grown up in the shadow of his grandfather and then his father's shame and infidelity, and whose last name had been dragged through the mud in his birthplace of England, whose father was this fanatic of spiritual realms and this proselytizer of the fourth dimension? What happened to Sebastian Hinton, the third generation of a family renowned for its refusal to conform to society's insistence on religious purity, monogamy, and three-dimensionality? Well, we actually don't know all that much about Sebastian. He never achieved the levels of fame that the generations before him had. All that we know about him comes from biographies of his much more famous wife, Carmelita Hinton, who was a bold advocate of progressive methods of teaching, who inspired her husband to begin building innovative playground material that she would put in her schools. Sebastian, like his father before him, suffered from an intense depression. Perhaps it also came from a world that was changing too quickly. Only 3 years after submitting his patent for the jungle gym, Sebastian Hinton checked himself into a clinic in hopes of treating his mental illness. Very shortly after, he committed suicide. If you're listening to this podcast, I assume you're just a little too old to go and play on the jungle gym whenever your heart desires. I know I am, sadly. But next time you walk by a playground, I hope you spare a thought for the Hinton clan. Now that you know the true story of this structure, I wonder if you will look at children playing happily on a jungle gym the exact same way again. I think that's the case for a lot of structures in our day-to-day life. They have some amazing backstory, and most of them we will never know. When I came across the story of the jungle gym, which in my view is quite tragic, I was right in the middle of doing research for my master's dissertation on the fourth dimension. Later that day, still amazed by the story's twists and turns and impact, I walked by a playground in my town. It'd been so long since I saw a jungle gym, let alone used one, and sometimes you just want to see a portal to the fourth dimension in the flesh. Sure enough, children were having the time of their lives, scrambling over the ropes, swinging by their hands from the monkey bar. I walked quickly by, like you're supposed to do when you're a childless adult near a playground. But I found myself wondering if the Hintons had actually changed the world. Are children different when they gain this new perspective? Are they less bound to civilization and freer when they climb, as James Hinton dreamed? Up there on the top of this strange structure, can they comprehend geometry in a special way, as Charles Howard Hinton desired? Or are they, as Sebastian Hinton wrote in his patent application, children in play, swinging like a troop of monkeys through the treetops in the jungle? Thanks for joining me for another episode of Novum. If you would like to hear more from me and Novum, I have 15 other episodes up on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. If I could ask one thing from you, it's that you leave us a review on iTunes. I only have a few up there right now, and if you enjoyed the program or the episode, I would really appreciate hearing your thoughts. You can also reach out to me on Facebook or over email at novumpodcast@gmail.com. I'm just in the process of setting up a brand new website for Novum where you can find all the episodes and alongside blog posts and transcripts, so bear with me while I set that up. As always, the episode today was written and produced by me, Ari Brin, and our music was composed by Christopher McIntyre. I hope to see you next week on a new episode of Novum.